Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Tumultuous day at the tennis, and Catherine Whittaker and myself, David Law, are back in the lobby where we saw Nick Kyrgios going out a few nights ago, where we saw Fabio Fognini and family. And Catherine and I have
kind of going out.
Yes.
Seen him going a different kind of out.
Yeah, we have seen him going out of the US Open tonight, Nick Kyrgios, in three straight sets at the hands of Mr. Rublev, who was quite superb. But it's been a funny old night, I think it is fair to say, in so many different ways. I mean, it's been an interesting day, but the night session has just been everything I didn't expect it to be, I would say. We've just spent the last few hours in the bar watching it, all of it. I'm four beers low tonight, so forgive me. But The night itself, I just couldn't see it going like this. I mean, as we said, straight sets for Kyrgios to go out of the tournament at the hands of Rublev. Coco Gauff won three games.
Three in love, yeah.
Against Naomi Osaka, who was fantastic tonight. And then Denis Shapovalov has lost to Gael Monfils in a fifth set heartbreaker.
True that, yeah.
So we were sitting in there, and I mean, you know, we like all these players on one level or another, but as you know, we have a bit of a soft spot for Kyrgios and for Shapovalov, and
and it's been really depressing.
It's been terrible, all of it, from that perspective. But let's go through it one at a time. Let's start at the end with the evening session first, because Kyrgios in particular, I've never seen a performance like that from him, ever. Can you remember a performance like that? Because this is how I would describe it. I would describe it as pretty anemic. He tried hard. He didn't argue with anybody. Apart from one line judge who reported him for swearing, but I mean, you know, it was very minor in the early stages of the match. Eva Azdarakimor was the umpire. I've had a theory for a while that he would be quiet if he had a female umpire in the chair, because I think he's a polite lad at heart with women. But I wasn't expecting a performance like this where he tried to play some big tennis. He kind of played responsible professional tennis, and that was not what the doctor ordered in order to beat Rublev.
Yeah, I revert back to, although it was a better performance, I revert back to my criticism of his performance in sets 3 and 4 against Nadal at Wimbledon. I know lots of people were lauding that, and it was laudable for its composure and the sort of self-containment of it, which we're not used to from Nick Kyrgios, and which was a refreshing upturn in his behaviour. But he was unable to reach a compromise between behaving well but also doing the stuff that makes him electric. It's okay to throw in the junk, to do an underarm serve. You can do an underarm serve and also not be a douchebag. Where's the middle ground? Where's the Nick Kyrgios that's able to just be on the edge, disrupt the opponent, not give two hoots? It's like he thought, I think he let himself care tonight and he can't cope with it.
Yeah, well,
I don't think he can cope with wanting it.
He went into his shell out there as a tennis player in terms of strategy. I mean, look, I think things like underarm serves are very specific to...
But, I mean, for underarm serve, read any one of Nick Kyrgios's, box of tricks. But tons of them.
But where were the off pace shots? Yeah. Where were the angles? Where were the
drawing the opponent into the net?
Yeah,
the dinks, the messing him around.
Where were the unnecessary through the leg shots? Not one in the whole night.
He can only do that when he walks onto the court with the didn't give a toss.
Feeling loose.
Yeah, feeling loose. I don't give a toss about this. And I was doing the wrap-up show from the studio, building up to the night session between 6:30 and 7 p.m. tonight, and Nick Kyrgios came out for his pre-match practice on the practice court behind us, so close that we actually lowered our voices when we were doing the Nick Kyrgios section of discussion. And he walked out with his little entourage and his basketball top and baggy shorts and everything, fine. And he placed a boombox down on the court and started playing hip-hop. And of course, I was saying that's hilarious and charming and all the rest of it, but I thought, he's nervous here. He's trying to keep himself loose. Yeah. And I thought the same when, we were watching the ESPN coverage in the bar, and good on ESPN for running with this. Apparently Nick Kyrgios earlier in the afternoon, watching ESPN's coverage, put out a trolling tweet about Tom Rinaldi.
About his commentary.
And ESPN put Tom Rinaldi on the pre-match interview, which was a real work of magic, I would say. And
Kyrgios looked sheepish.
He looked sheepish about the whole thing.
He did, didn't he? It was so strange to watch.
He needs some therapy. I mean that in the most wonderful... Not wonderful, I mean that in the warmest possible way, because it's so obvious. I feel like it could be easily fixed.
Probably.
Psychologist Whitaker speaks.
Yeah, we probably all need a bit.
Everyone's been at the bar for 3 hours, thinks they can solve everyone else's problems.
There was a moment tonight, however, where I just... we'll get on to Rublev in a minute, because he deserves his props here, right? Because he was fantastic. But there was a moment tonight when the ESPN transmission did a split screen, and we were in the pub, and we did not know where to look, because you had Kyrgios on one screen in a tiebreak. Bear in mind, in the second set tiebreak, he was a set down, but he got himself into a second set tiebreak. He was four love up.
Four love with that, the quickest serve-wise in the business.
Can't believe it. And on the other screen...
He bottled it.
On the other screen...
He bottled it.
Well, you must have done, because that doesn't happen. On the other screen, you got Shapovalov, who I think was 5-3 down.
Who did the opposite.
Yeah, he just went for it,
and it was...
I mean, he got himself into a fifth set as a result of it.
It was a more uplifting defeat.
Oh, I think really Shapovalov, on the whole, can take nothing but positives from that match. He got that close in a best-of-five set match when he was 2-1 down, he was 5-3 down, and then he suddenly just went for it. And my goodness, it was irresistible.
Shapovalov was making us gasp, wasn't he? And yeah. I can't think of when did Nick Kyrgios... there was that one rally midway through the second set when I think it was in the seventh game, actually, the famous seventh game.
He was break point down. He was two break points down, and he did an off pace forehand, came in, did a volley cross court, and then was
did a little lob.
And he was in trouble, but he managed to volley away for a winner.
And it showed nous and awareness and anticipation and all that kind of instinctiveness.
Yes.
That makes him so special. That makes us speculate that, well, what does he need a coach for? Because he knows how to play tennis. Well, it's one thing when he's able to run in digital mode, but lots of other things come into play. Nerves, tension, all the rest of it. Didn't read any of it. He was unable. He needed patterns and mantras and instructions.
He was paralysed tonight.
In order to make it work on analog mode. Mm.
Mental paralysis tonight.
But I feel a little bit more uplifted by it than... I mean, I'm not uplifted at all, but I feel like there is a tiny little nugget in that he let himself care.
Mm. Okay, well, yeah, I mean, but his takeaway might be, I'm not doing that again.
Maybe.
Right.
Then he's not lost anything.
Let's get on to bigging up Andrei Rublev and Gael Monfils, who actually won those respective matches. Rublev, for a start, I mean, you know, it's quite a challenge having Kyrgios down the other end. And he just kept on plugging away. What a professional performance. He was very good. I mean, everything he does well, he did well. I think he benefited enormously from not being asked to do any of it out of his strike zone.
It was Nadal-like in his laser-like, relentless focus, I thought. I really am not sure I can think of anybody other than Nadal, even with in his shell, Nick Kyrgios. I'm not sure I can think of anybody else that would have mentally performed like Rublev did tonight. Can you?
No, I mean, I'm sure there are one or two.
It's that one moment, in fact, in the same rally that you just described, where he ended up on the floor chasing after a ball, and he ended up flat on his face on the floor, and he thought, hang on, is this the first sign of exasperation from Rublev? Regrouped like that, it was over.
Yeah.
Didn't give him a sniff.
He's clearly benefited, I would say, from his time away from the sport. I think that has really focused his mind about how much it means to him, and he was not going to let this chance pass. Now, Kyrgios might have stopped him, but Kyrgios wasn't there sufficiently to do that.
There's something terrifying about the assassin-like eyes of Andrei Rublev, isn't there? He's like if he weren't so childlike, he would be like an 80s Russian Bond villain, except that he's in the body of a 9-year-old.
And therefore, he's more suitable for being in a horror film.
Yeah, because child baddies are the scariest kind of baddies.
I feel like running for the doors.
He's not
now.
A baddie. I love him. I'm rooting for him. I think he's brilliant and ninja-like and disarming. But he was there. Yeah, there was a look in his eye.
He was just going to be there until the end. You were going to have to beat him. Whereas,
but it was such an unintelligent match from Kyrgios, wasn't it?
Particularly
anyway.
By his standards.
Nothing about Rublev was exposed.
Haven't seen Kyrgios's interview post-match, so we'll have a little look at that tomorrow. But Gael Monfils, meanwhile, was playing on inspiration tonight, it seemed to me. As we said, for a start, he had to come back from a set down against Shapovalov, who played pretty well, as well as I've seen him play over a best of five set match. Shapovalov, I think he was absolutely fantastic, but he had some dips, and Monfils just used his experience and just rode them out. I mean, to withstand that fourth set for Monfils when he was 5-3 ahead, and then Shapovalov just played unplayable tennis, I think was enormously impressive for Monfils to come out in that fifth and win it. And he looked so satisfied, didn't he, by it all. I mean, he got his family in the box, he got Alina Svitolina there, he just looked so fulfilled by it,
which is good and bad, isn't it? Because the bad is that you feel like that's enough for him. to have a night like that, to win through to the second week, to do it in that fashion, you don't feel like that's making him think.
I don't really think that he feels that's enough. I do feel, how are we sitting here with him in his 30s and he's only ever reached a Grand Slam semi-final in his career?
Well, I would say because nights like that are enough for him. And look, he doesn't owe us anything, that's fine. He's only got himself to answer to. Different folks, different strokes, but
it's a shame.
It makes it hard to root for him, I find.
You want to see a bit more ambition than that in your players. You want to see players that want to do it all. I think when you're rooting for somebody, and I find it hard not to look at Gael Monfils and be disappointed overall. Maybe that's harsh, but I feel like there's somebody with an amount of talent that could have done X, Y, and Z. That he hasn't is entirely up to him. It's his life. But based on what I thought he was capable of, it's been a little underwhelming, or quite a lot underwhelming, in terms of actual achievement levels.
It's funny seeing him be the conservative one.
Yeah. Shapovalov is just... Is there a more explosive tennis player in the world than that kid?
Kyrgios, but not tonight.
The thing is, though, Shapovalov doesn't have off-pace shots. He just goes for it.
No, there's no... And the swing is so big.
Yeah, I mean, he is swinging for the hills.
We're not talking about a lash, you know, a short backswing lash at the ball. We're talking about these enormously
haymakers.
Backswings, they're so elaborate.
Yes.
It's just
gymnastics,
it's audacious.
Tennis.
Everything about his game is audacious. And I'm sway with the wind with Shapovalov, ridiculously so, but I'm gutted that I'm not going to get to see him play again this tournament.
The only thing is, he has been like that for years. I mean, you definitely sort of were excited about him before I was. You watched him first before I did. But he's trod water for 18 months whilst still playing tennis like that in spurts. It's just that they haven't meant much because they've just been decorations.
He's had no plan.
Yeah. This week it's felt like he's had a plan. And Mikhail Yuzhny has made a difference.
Under threat of death
from
Mikhail Yuzhny.
From the henchman, Mikhail, with his shaven head. And he just stands there looking like, you know, if you don't, there will be consequences,
yeah.
Dennis.
Great.
And you know, he looked the biggest thing I can say is he looked like a professional tennis player, not a junior, this fortnight. And I think that there's as long as they continue working together and build on this, there's a real chance for Shapovalov to fulfil his potential.
No, but I want it now.
Okay, let's talk about
this tournament.
Right, okay, let's talk about Coco Gauff and Naomi Osaka working our way backwards in the order of play, which was greeted by hype that was off the scale, quite honestly. It was an obscene amount of hype. Great fun, and obviously we touched on it yesterday with Chris Clary and the whole Coco Gauff story, which is a fascinating one. It's exhilarating, but it is something that I don't feel completely comfortable with. And today she lost 6-3, 6-love, and as a match, I thought Naomi Osaka treated it like a Grand Slam final. She just played fantastic tennis virtually the whole way through. I don't think Gauff was bad. I think she was unable to keep up with that level of play from somebody who is a Grand Slam champion. You know, we saw how old she is there. She's 15. She still isn't fully developed. You know, she still plays slightly reactive tennis, and she was getting shots hit at her that she couldn't really cope with, or combinations of shots. The aftermath, we were watching it with sort of subtitles on as Nick Kyrgios walks into the hotel with his racket bag over his shoulder and goes to the reception. And we had...
He's forgotten his room key.
And we had, in the aftermath of the match, they shook hands. Nikiros has gone now, by the way, folks. We knew he was coming.
You only finished the match about 40 minutes ago.
Must have been a cracking press conference.
Has he showered?
Massive warm down. No, I mean, come on, he hasn't got to play today. He's still in the doubles.
Marius Koppel.
Who'd have thought it? But at the end of the match, Osaka went up to Goff, and we were watching this match on the TV in the bar, and no sound on it, but subtitles. And suddenly we heard from Coco Gauff. She'd had a conversation with Naomi Osaka at the net, and you're wondering what it's about. It didn't look like the just commiserations type or whatever, and Gauff started to cry. And then she came and she ended up doing an interview as one of the losing players, which I understand in as much as we've had it at Queen's in the past, where if a British player has performed admirably but not won, we've often asked them if they would still do an interview on court even though they hadn't won. And they've done it. So she stayed and did her interview first, but again, she was in tears throughout. And it turns out Naomi Osaka had actually asked her to do an interview together. Now, I don't know whether Naomi had been asked to ask her. I'm not sure what happened there, but I was taken aback by that.
I've never seen anything like it before. The way she asked was charming and compassionate, and it created a wonderful embracing moment between the two of them. But I'd love to know whether that was pre-planned or whether it was just this sort of instinctive knowledge from Osaka, given everything she's experienced over the last 12 months about what TV and the tournament would want. It could be that. I mean, she's had a hell of an induction over the last 12 months into the commercial demands of the sport. I don't know. I'd love to know. And it was brilliantly handled by her, whatever the driving force. I felt uncomfortable, as wonderfully as she dealt with it. And I felt uncomfortable with watching a crying 15-year-old being asked questions designed to make her cry. Or certainly not. I don't know. I mean, it's not that they were insensitive questions. I just felt uncomfortable with
the kid was crying,
with everybody
already,
being
so
okay with, and you know, knowing that people somewhere in their minds were thinking this is great TV, and I'm in the market of great TV. I get it. I get that that's a consideration for all of us, and I'm not.
I think it was unnecessary, to be honest. I think she should have.
With it.
I would prefer it if they'd have just let her go off the court to a standing ovation, and
absolutely
come back another day when you're a bit older. You know.
And that's fine. It's all absolutely fine.
Yes.
None of anything that's been said about her, apart from the absolute hyperbole, which I disregard, frankly, none of it is any less true after tonight. She's lost to the world number one, and she's 15 years old, and she played a good match. She's given a decent account of herself. None of her potential has been disproved tonight. All that we've been reminded of, and we shouldn't have needed reminding, but is that it's potential. She's good. And she has potential to be amazing. And she does have something incredibly special about her. And the way she connects with crowds is uplifting and startling. And that's all wonderful. But enjoy it for what it is. Why do we have to be talking about her being the greatest ever or a world number one? Or why does it have to be about everything? Can't it just be about what it is now?
And well, that's what Chris was saying yesterday. Why does everything has to be a throw forwards? And what would it mean for the future? You know, she's a very, very young woman, and she should be allowed to just grow as a tennis player and a human being at a pace that is doable. I hope that happens, that's all. So He was quite reassuring, actually, in the show last night, Chris, on that subject. But yes, I'm kind of glad it's over. And that Naomi Osaka...
I know that makes me a party pooper, but I'm too.
Naomi Osaka can move forwards looking an awful lot happier with life than she did when she spoke to you on day one of the media day.
Yeah, most focused she's felt since the Australian Open is what she said on the court, isn't it? Really insightful quote.
Mm. Yeah, and she just played fantastic tennis tonight. She'd have beaten most people.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. One person she might have had her hands full with is Bianca Andreescu. Because I watched her this afternoon and it was quite interesting. She was playing Caroline Wozniacki and she beat her, I think, 6-4, 6-3. She actually let her back in. 6-4. She's won all four sets against her 6-4. And she could have beaten her a lot more straightforward than that if she'd have just taken her chances. She panicked a bit and snatched at a few shots. Well, I think Wozniacki played quite well. She fought like a lion, did Wozniacki. Tried so hard, and that tells you just how good Andreescu was. This woman, skill set wise, has to be one of the most talented tennis players I've come across in terms of just the sheer number of things she does well.
And one of the things she does well is rise to all and every occasion. So some people were saying, oh, it's her first time on Arthur Ashe. She's played, I think, her two matches previous to this were on court 10 and court 5, which is bonkers scheduling, I think, by the way, and apparently it caused a bit of a crowd hazard. People were so keen to catch a glimpse of her in the opening couple of rounds, but it didn't even occur to me for a split second that she might not respond well to playing on the Arthur Ashe Stadium for the first time. I mean, obviously she was going to love it and cope with it brilliantly.
Because
I mean, not even cope isn't even the right word.
Just
she's not
embrace,
coping.
Enjoy.
She's just blooming loving it.
Yeah.
And she was asked about it after a second round.
And she said, check me out.
She was asked the court assignments after a second round. And most people would go, I'm happy to play anywhere. It's just a privilege to be at the US Open. I'll play wherever they put me. She went, yeah, I really love to play on the Arthur Ashe Stadium. Get me out there. Check me out. She's got the goods to back it up, though.
Yeah.
Everyone checked her out in the Arthur Ashe Stadium and they went, yep. She's good.
You'll do. Any chance she can be American? Nope.
I just think she's great.
Yeah, she's awesome. She now faces who?
Taylor Townsend. Yes, please.
Oh, Taylor Townsend. Serve and volley.
Yeah, Jackie McEnory.
Relentlessly. Oh, it was just a wonderful sight. She played Saronica Steyer, who fought well, played a good match, and was actually a breakup in the first set. But Taylor Townsend just kept on coming. I think she had well over 50% of her points serve and volley.
She ended at a net on 57% of points today, 53% in the second round, and 18% in the first round.
That's quite a difference, isn't it?
Yep.
And that was your big stat of the day, wasn't it? You came up with that on your own. You told Matt. Well, Matt was like, whoa.
People gave me the raw materials and I thought, oh, I can do some maths here.
I tell you, you just looked like the cat that had got cream. Dear, oh dear. Matt was really jolted by that.
All I did was some rudimentary maths.
More than I did.
Hashtag analysis. I think that was a bigger win in many ways than the Halep win. She was expected to win it. And I think there were a lot of question marks about how much of an element of surprise there was in the Halep victory. You know, somebody just not knowing how to play against her, not being used to playing against somebody like that. And you know, there was so much analysis about Halep's failure to use the lob, given that it seems so obvious from the outside. Most people seem to conclude that her mind didn't go there because she was so affronted by the whole style of play. Saronica Steyer didn't use it much today either.
It's not her game,
which was bizarre. But Jim Courier, who was in our Prime Video studio today, said that Bianca Andreescu will be spending the next 2 days practicing her lob.
Yeah, you can imagine it.
I mean, if that match disappoints, then I'll demand some sort of US Open refund. I know I'm being paid to be here.
She's being paid to be here.
But somehow I'll ask for some kind of refund. Because
she'll do something fundamentally against the law.
It simply has to be excellent.
So, I mean, look, we know Taylor Townsend's coming. It's the old Patrafter mantra. No secrets, mate. I'm coming in. So those two are going to play each other. We also commentated on Five Live Sports Extra, certainly today, on Rafael Nadal, who took on Hyun Chung, who played well. But Nadal was awesome again. He really was. I mean, I think for the first set he was a little bit erratic, but his injections of pace and angle to just turn baseline exchanges to his way. I mean, he couldn't really look better, I don't think, Nadal.
I'd agree with that. Couldn't really look better at this stage of the competition. He's had that walkover in the second round, so he's got a bit in reserve relative to where he would ordinarily be physically at this stage of the tournament. He was asked in his on-court interview about the fact that he's not wearing strapping on his knees anymore, and he said, strapping doesn't work for me anymore. Which was an amazing insight.
He also gave a bit of food insight that you weren't overly impressed with.
Well, he's an absolute maniac, it turns out. He doesn't like cheese. Actually,
it's up to him.
He said he doesn't eat cheese. He's never eaten cheese.
Yeah.
It's that old, I don't eat it because I don't like it.
He's like a child.
Yeah.
So I don't like it.
Try it, mate.
I say that to my kids sometimes.
Get yourself a lovely manchego. I promise you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Put it in front of my son and he goes, oh, I don't like that. I said, you never had it. No, I don't like it. No, how do you know you don't like it if you don't have it? On and on it goes.
He said, I don't mind the meat, but I prefer fish.
Go on, Rafa.
It was...
To which you... I mean, you were particularly surprised about the meat revelation, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, close your eyes and imagine Rafael Nadal eating a meal. In my head, he is some sort of caveman gnawing on the flesh... on the bone of, like, a buffalo.
and then he's sort of leapfrogging onto the back of the next buffalo to go and do some sort of rodeo.
Now, though, I have to imagine, given his revelation about how he prefers fish to the meat, oh, this is another Lord of the Rings reference. People are going to think I'm right weirdo.
At least you've
you
given
haven't even seen it, have you? Have you seen the Lord of the Rings?
I saw it, but I didn't really understand
There's a scene at the beginning of, I think, The Return of the King, where, maybe it's the second one, where Gollum / Sméagol just eats this fish, this live fish, with his bare hand. He grabs this fish and it just... bites into its flesh.
Oh God!
So now Nadal is sort of Sméagol in my head.
Right. Okay.
It was a revelation, anyway. What? Still things to learn about Rafael.
Tennis
Nadal.
Players as movie characters.
I'm not sure you'd find that a favourable comparison. Well, it depends if you go Gollum or Sméagol.
That's for another podcast, folks. What else happened?
Here,
what else
there?
Happened today?
Christy Arne, you aware of this story?
I'm aware of this story because hadn't she kind of played her first US Open match about 2008?
She, first and foremost, is from Flushing.
Oh, wow.
The home of the US Open. And second of all, she played her first Grand Slam match in 2008 and she won her first Grand Slam match in 2019.
Blimey.
And now she's won three of them in a row and is into the second week. It is, you'll be unsurprised to hear, the longest ever gap between playing one and winning one, 11 years. And it's an amazing story.
Yes.
And she had a celebration fitting of the story. It was wonderful.
If you get a chance to see her celebration, it's well worth it. Incidentally, I don't think we've had a chance to mention it yet. If you get a chance to see Gael Monfils's slam dunk pirouette smash from a couple of days ago, take that opportunity as well. It is the greatest shot that I've ever seen, and I mean that. I don't know how he did it. Anyway,
he did. But I can tell you, Jim Courier thinks he was practicing it for hours on end.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure
I know,
he was.
But those things are only cool if you think that they're off the cuff.
I would practice that every day for the next 10 years if I could pull it off.
Luca Puy's been hitting serves every day for the last 20 years and he could only get 24% of them in the other day.
That's brutal. Very true, though. Kirsty Arne, is that right?
Christy Arne, Christy Arne. I believe.
Sorry, Christy.
Christy Arne plays Elise Mertens.
She also, her pinned tweet on her account details... I mean, and this is a serious subject, and it happens all the time. It details some abuse she had from some awful troll who really should know better after one of her matches because she lost somebody that had been betting on a match. This happens all the time, and then they go on social media because they've lost some money, and they go and absolutely abuse the player. Christy Arne found this person's account, looked it up, found this person's sister, messaged the sister with details of what this person had tweeted to her and said, are you aware that your brother has been sending this to people he doesn't know? And the sister wrote back and said, no, I wasn't. It's absolutely appalling. You know, I'm gonna basically go and kick his ass, and you keep doing what you're doing, you're brilliant. Which was a fantastic little end to a horrible story.
Yeah, fight the good fight, Christy.
Yeah. Anything else we missed today? Anything else happen? Who else has won? before we look ahead to
Konservate withdrew.
Oh, yeah, poor old
so
Konservate.
Bencic is through.
Yes, Konservate had gastroenteritis.
Bencic plays Osaka.
Oh, really?
Not a foregone conclusion by any means.
No.
I think, yeah, Bencic plays Osaka.
That's a good match on paper, that.
Gerges beat Burtons.
Yes, another surprise.
And then you've got Vekic in that section of the draw.
Yeah, Vekic beat Putin Saver, and we obviously had Zverev having an epic, albeit a four-set one this time.
It's a ruthlessly efficient victory.
Yeah, four sets, a couple of tie breaks over Aliosh Bedene, well over 3 hours. But Zverev got through, so he's into the fourth round. I can't remember who he's playing, but anyway.
Either Schwartzman or Tennis Sangren, which is still in progress.
Yeah,
at
although Schwartzman was
done by now.
Schwartzman was winning that two sets to love.
I feel like Diego Schwartzman might win that. I don't know why I just volunteered a prediction. I regret it immediately.
Imagine if this is Zverev's year suddenly. And like, he just goes and wins it after all this. Dimitrov will be on tomorrow, won't he? Because he went through yesterday.
Majoszek.
Oh, right. Yes, that's who he beat.
Had a lesson from Daniela after our podcast experience the other night with Simon.
So tomorrow we have Wawrinka against Djokovic.
Mm.
What's happening?
Well, it's impossible, isn't it? Because we don't know how bad his shoulder is,
and
Djokovic.
Because we can't read the future.
Despite the fact that large portions of this podcast are premised on that.
Over the last 8 years.
So it's an impossible question due to incomplete information.
But we're going to have a go anyway.
But I think Wawrinka might win.
Mic drop. I can't drop my mic because I won't be able to talk on the podcast.
Don't you think Wawrinka might win?
Yes. I think if they were fully fit, if there wasn't the question mark over the shoulder, Djokovic is the favourite because he's the better player overall. And...
They have both played at their peak, and Wawrinka's won.
Yeah.
He can do that over the course of a year. Djokovic is the better player by far.
I suppose what I'm saying is
on
a given day, Wawrinka is capable of tennis that can really hurt Djokovic and beat him. No question about it. I mean, he's proved that. Three times at Slams now?
Twice in Slam finals.
Twice in Slam finals.
Including here.
You know, he can strong arm him
to anyone, not just Djokovic. Yeah.
No, not anybody, because he doesn't do it to Federer.
Not to Nadal.
Federer gets him every time. Mm. Rushes him with his game.
To be fair, Nadal does as well.
And Nadal beats him at his own game because he doesn't give him, you know, he rushes him and he's in a different way.
True.
But Djokovic can't hurt him in the same way. Most of the time anyway, I think that he's able to put, it's like a boxer against a puncher when it's Wawrinka against against Djokovic, and Djokovic outboxes him, but then suddenly you get this feeling that Wawrinka can just floor him because of his sheer brute power. The difference is that this isn't the reason why we're talking about this. We have an unknown quantity in Djokovic right now. We don't know whether he's going to be able to be fully fit and play this match like himself or not. And on the balance of what I've seen, I think when he's... I mean, Dennis Kudler is not going to put you in the sort of positions that Wawrinka will put you in and put the sort of pressure on. And I just feel that when all of that pressure is applied, if Djokovic is hurting like I suspect he is... think he's probably not going to be able to quite cope with it.
I'd agree with all of that.
Then we'll see. That's all coming up tomorrow night. What else is happening?
Konta Pliskova.
Oh yeah, who's winning that?
I've got a feeling for Konta.
Me too.
6-1 the head-to-head, but it's 1-1 on hard courts, and it's just something about Konta.
Yeah, we're going to be coming on tomorrow night saying, oh dear, that didn't work. Let's delete that podcast. What else?
Serena.
Yeah. Who's she playing?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but somebody that she's definitely going to beat, I thought.
Let's get the old order of play up, Catherine. That's what we should do.
I've got substandard internet.
Middle Sunday of the US Open. And it's a cracking day.
If it were Wimbledon, we'd be having the day off.
We don't expect you to be sorry for us, folks, because all we're doing is going to tennis tournaments, let's be honest, and watching tennis all day.
Who needs sleep?
Who needs
definitely,
sleep?
Definitely me.
Right, you've Petra got the order to play. Petra Martic against...
I do like Petra Martic.
She plays beautiful tennis.
She does, it's lovely.
Lovely all-court tennis.
Serena's going to win.
Yep.
Federer Goffin.
Federer's going to win. Goffin will put up a decent
Keys.
Show. Oh, that's a good match. Svitolina looks in a good place right now. That is a fascinating match.
And Madison Keys had that bizarre treatment in the match last night against Kenin. Won in straight sets, but she had the trainer out. She was having a blood pressure taken.
Yeah, she wasn't. I think she got a bit of a bug. Mm. There's a bug going around at the moment.
So I've heard Chong Wong against Ash Barty.
I don't know about Svitolina. I think Svitolina might beat Keys.
Yes, I think so too. Konta Pliskova, Kepfer, Medvedev. Can I have a word on Medvedev? I mean, I don't even know what I can possibly say that can sum up my...
I mean, I covered it, but you need your say.
I loved that on-court interview so much. I just want to feed it directly into my veins, and every time I hit any kind of adversity in life, be it big or small... trivial or
pursuit
earth shattering, I want to channel my inner Daniil. I know not all elements of his behaviour during that match that led up until the booing were perfect by any means. I'm not talking about the fact that he was being booed or the events that led up to it. I'm talking about his dealing with that moment. It was superhero stuff.
You've just been watching it over and over today,
over
haven't you?
Over and over and over.
That's very funny. Okay, is there anything else we need to talk about? Have you got it out of your system now?
Not really.
Okay.
I want to stand in the middle of this hotel foyer and do a... Come on then.
Did you see that? You didn't actually see the video that I recorded today, did you?
No.
I did the Daniil Medvedev. Should I just do you a brief reenactment? It's on social media. If you'd like
you're going to do a reenactment of a reenactment.
Yes. If you'd like it if you'd like to see the actual video of it, it is on our Instagram story, only for a short period of time. But the gist of what I said is, Catherine, every time you boo me for launching a pole vault, it will give me the energy for 500 more pole vaults.
Please know that when you go to sleep tonight,
it's because of you.
It's because of you that I won this match. I need to find scenarios in my everyday life that I can repackage that phrase.
Oh, magnificent.
And use it.
And with that, folks, we will say goodnight for another edition of the Tennis Podcast. We'll be back with another daily tomorrow, of course. Brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by tennisballs.com, mascotted by Rio with a Y. Folks, tell everybody you know. Tell everybody you know about the Tennis Podcast. Why wouldn't you? You've just spent 42 minutes of your life listening to it. You might as well tell some other people to suff with you. Leave us a review on iTunes, as long as it's good. And if it's not good, don't. We'll be back with another one tomorrow. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.